final principle. It's called meditating to the sound of creation. The affirmation for this is, I meditate each day to increase my awareness of the divine power within me. Through meditation, I'm able to realize the beauty, grace, and love that directs my life and fulfills my deepest desires. So, everything on this program up until now has been foreplay. This is the orgasm, all right? And even though the higher part of us knows that foreplay and orgasm are all the same, the ego part of us says, yeah, but I want it now. And we still are encapsulated in that bag, aren't we, of skin. The idea of meditation is really the idea of connecting to your source. If you've heard what I've said throughout these tapes, you will know that the way that you make contact with your source is the way Melville described it when he said, God's one and only voice is silence. We are looking for a way to manifest. That's what this entire program is about. And we are going to understand that this manifesting process of attracting to us what it is that we desire involves certain principles, all of which have been reviewed and which you will continue to review. And that also we can begin to participate ourselves in this act of co-creating our life. It is not something that just happens to us. We are not placed here from another world into this one and then on to another world. It's all one. Just like the plum tree that we talked about earlier and the plums. So we grow out of this world. And in order to be able to get to the left-hand side of the room, the side which is the cause of all that is on the right side, even though it's all one, we must learn to get quiet and also to somehow figure out a way to participate in this act of co-creating. And most of us have been raised on the conditioned idea that this is not something that is possible for us, that we can't really do it ourselves. So what we want to do is learn this thing that I call picturing, and to be able to picture what it is that we would like and then detach ourselves from the picture is something that our egos don't really take well to. In other words, if we have a picture, then the ego part of us says, yeah, okay, now I want it fulfilled. And what you have to do is remove fear and doubt from all of your pictures and come at these internal pictures with a knowing. And then you have to have an enthusiasm for these pictures showing up in your life with a detached view of whether or not they do or not. Again, a paradox. Enthusiasm is a word that, if you look it up in the etymology of the word enthusiasm, it breaks down to entheos, which means the God, and asm means within. The enthusiasm literally translates to the God within. I don't know if you've ever noticed in your life, but when you are inspired in your life, when you're truly inspired in your life, everything seems to be working. For me, when I am inspired, it is with my writing and my speaking. When you are inspired, very often you are making love to the person that you adore. When you are inspired, very often you might be painting, you might be creating music, you might be cooking up something that you've never cooked up before, you might be in a dream, you might be listening to music. Whatever it is, when you feel inspired, you're not thinking about what's missing, you're not thinking about whether or not you have enough money to do what you want to do. The money seems to take care of itself. You don't think about any of your ills, any of your pains, any of your struggles. That's all, for the moment of your inspiration, those things are all gone from your life. And why is that so? Why does the moment of your inspiration seem to be devoid of all of the ego-centered kinds of things about your self-absorption and your fears and your doubts and you're not having enough money and you got pains and you got all of these things? Why is that? Because the word inspire really comes from the concept of inspiration, to be in inspired means to be in spirit. And when you are in spirit, you have transcended the physical side of you. And meditation puts you in spirit. It takes you out of the world of the physical and all of the ailments and all of the struggles and all of the fears and all of the doubts and all of the anxieties, and it puts you in spirit. And when you are in spirit on purpose, everything is working. Everything is working. I remember the story of Sir Laurence Olivier, who had given one of the greatest performances of Hamlet that had ever been given in history, someplace in, I think it was at Oxford in England. And they had given him a 20-minute standing ovation, and it was this rousing thing, and he went back to his dressing room, and one of his friends came into the room and said, "That was fabulous. There's never been an interpretation of Hamlet like that." And Sir Laurence Olivier said, "Don't you think I know that?" And he was very upset. And his friend said, "How could you possibly be upset after that, giving that great performance?" And his response was, "But I don't know how I did it and if I can ever do it again." And that's almost the inner kind of energy that drives us. When we get inspired, we know there's something else working. We know something else is there with us, supporting us, guiding us, helping us. Somehow we know we're not doing this thing alone. As I know right now, as I'm speaking. Many of the examples, the stories, the things that have come out in this live presentation, I had no idea that I would be using or saying when I came up here. And yet, when you get inspired, when you get in spirit, you're not alone. And what we want to learn to do is to have a picturing process in our minds that is consistent with our desire to be inspired as frequently as we possibly can, to have that sense of being in spirit. And meditation allows us to do this. When you are able to be inspired, what you want to then begin to do is to be alert for the first sprouting of seeds of your manifestation. You want to be looking but not demanding. You want to be observing and noticing, but not insisting. It's like almost playing this game with your ego. What's the ego part of you says, "Yeah, I want it now." And your higher self says, "You just want to be at peace. But look around." And as you see it, you begin to tune into the cues. The reason that this process works is because this divine intelligence that is endless, that is inexhaustible, will cooperate with you when your pictures come from in spirit. It will cooperate with you. It always has. It's what sustains you. It's what allows you to breathe. It's what allows you to think and process and listen. It will cooperate. So this picturing process is also important in the meditative process in terms of keeping it private and keeping it secret, if you will. The great sages always move about in secrecy. They don't have a sign, and they don't go on the Tonight Show, and they don't tell everybody how great they are, and they don't perform their great tricks and so on for the benefit of others, especially for the approval of others. They walk quietly along the earth plane, drawing no attention to themselves. And when you ask them what is their greatest desire, they'll tell you it's to disappear, to not be noticed, to not have attention, to not have a lot of organization around them, to just very quietly be tuned in and doing God's work. And so the importance of what it is that you would like to manifest and keeping it a silent inner awareness in which you are not needing to go to those people in your life whom you most frequently seek approval from and have them agree that this is something you want to do. Instead, this becomes your own private dialogue with the divine intelligence, with God. And as you take on this sense of your private dialogue with God, you let go of those ego demands when you start telling other people, because the minute you start telling other people, instantly what happens is you start looking for the reactions. And the minute you do that, you have set up an obstacle, a blockage. You've left the spirit. You've left the silent part of yourself and gotten back into the noise. And very often we will think and tell ourselves, yes, but I have to share it. But there are areas of your life that are between you and you. Between the part of you that is here on the right-hand side of the room and the part of you that's on the left-hand side as well. And you need to understand the importance of just having this inner knowing and not being concerned with whether or not other people agree with it or don't agree with it. It's not even relevant. Remember Maslow's admonition to me as a young man? Be independent of the good opinion of other people if you want to be self-actualized. Detach from the outcome and have no investment in power over others. Keep those things in mind as we practice this meditation. And now as I begin the process of explaining this meditation, I'm going to tell you that I'm only explaining it to you as I learned it. As a great teacher, as Guruji explained it to me on the tape that he sent to me, and then later in letters, and then later in person. And so what I would ask you to do now is to remove all of your doubt and to open yourself up to entering into a world which you have been conditioned to reject. It's very much like taking on the attitude of willingly suspending your disbelief, which is what you do when you enter into a movie theater. And you look at the movie theater and you don't say to yourself, oh, this is a two-dimensional screen and I'm not going to be sucked into this and get my emotions be torn around by this particular screen. I know that that's just lights being projected from the rear of the room onto this two-dimensional screen. You don't do that. You walk into the theater and you say, entertain me. I willingly suspend my disbelief. And then you let go. And then when you finish in the theater, you come back and you talk about it, and you know that for the hour or two or three that you were in the theater, you have suspended all disbelief. This is what you have to do with this meditation. You have to understand that you're still a cookie thief. You still have this idea that you know what reality is based upon conditioned responses. And there, while I do not deny that what you know about reality to be true, I would suggest that there are other separate realities as well that you probably have been fearful of entering because of your tribal conditioning. And now what you want to do is let go of that, just temporarily, for 20 minutes every morning and 20 minutes every evening. And I encourage you to practice this meditation and do it for 90 days. At sunrise, if you possibly can. And at sunset, if you can. And at sunrise, a lot of you will say, yes, but I can't get up that early. But what I want to tell you is that when you practice meditation, you learn that you need much less sleep because you get more rest in 20 minutes of meditation than you will get in 3 or 4 hours of sleep. And this, again, goes back to your tribal conditioning. I need to sleep for 1/3 of my life. 1/3 of my life. If you live 90 years, that means you're going to sleep for 30 years. Okay? And you ask yourself the question, perhaps I could cut that down and get another 10 years of awaking consciousness. Or I could learn that all of that which I can do in my sleep, which I talked about in some of my earlier programs, and you'll see it when you believe it, on transformation, that you can become a waking dreamer, that you can learn to be awake and do all of those magical things that you can do while you're sleeping, which is to transcend time and to go back and forth as you can be a young person and an old person, all of those things that you do every night, that flying that you do when you wake up and look back on it, being 12 again, being with someone who's passed on, changing shapes, being an animal, all of those things that you think, you know, I do that for 1/3 of my life. you know, when they asked Lao Tzu that question, he said, I went to sleep and I dreamt that I was a butterfly. Then I awoke, and now I don't know. Am I a man who dreamt that he was a butterfly, or am I a butterfly who's dreaming that he's a man? How could I know? It's just two-thirds, one-third. Which third is it that you are using? This idea of being able to meditate and manifest was something I had never really considered before. But I was open to it, because being open is one of the things that I have been blessed with in my life. Just some people call it being gullible. But I've always just experimented and looked at new and strange ways. And the stranger it is, the more intrigued I am by it. And if it's really weird and really far out there, I want to go. That's probably why Stuart Wilde and I get along so well, who has another program with Nightingale Cohen that I did the introduction for. He's one of my dear friends. Taught me a lot about etheric energy and meditation and manifesting. And so I was told that the key to understanding this is to understand three words. And these three words are sounds have power. Now, again, this often will fly in the face of that which we have been taught by our ego mind. But the way it was explained to me made so much sense. Logically, it's like what we have to do with a lot of this kind of information, the spiritual information and the stuff that about being able to heal and the stuff about being able to have things show up and so on, is we have to get our left brain, we have to get the part of us that wants to reject all of this because of our conditioning, to believe it. The part of us that is analyzing and figuring and needing an explanation versus our right brain, which is the part of us that is intuitive and is the heart space and is just operates on feelings. So you want to try to bring these two together. And that's what this explanation did for me. The beauty of sound is that there are different dimensions. There's the dimension of the world of form that we all are experiencing, that we're all in. Right? What our bodies and our chairs and our beds and our houses and all of that. There's that world of form. And that's a vibration. It vibrates at a certain speed. And then there's the other level of way, way, way up past that called the etheric level, which is another vibration. The world of thought and the world of spirit. And lower than that, but still vibrating very fast, are things like x-rays. And then there's heat. And then there's light. And there's all of these things are vibrations, very, 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 very fast vibrations, until you get down to where we can actually see things and touch things. That's a level of vibration. But in between that etheric level of very, very, very fast vibration, the vibration in which things begin to materialize, to go from waves to particles, in between there's an intermediary dimension. And that intermediary dimension between the world of form and the world of spirit or thought is the vibration of sound. And sound is our access to those higher, faster vibrations of speed and thought. So that even though we can't see sound, we can measure it pretty well with scopes and so on. We can tell how fast the vibrations go. Through sound, we can leave the world of form and use it as a vehicle for getting to that level of divine intelligence, which is vibrating at a very, very, like trillions and trillions and trillions of times per second, versus sound, which is between 30,000 vibrations and, say, 16,000 vibrations, whatever it is. So think about sounds like this. And certain sounds, therefore, have different capacities than other sounds. And there are certain sounds that are associated with this ability to be able to manifest. And if you learn these sounds and practice these sounds and meditate to these sounds, you will begin to access and make contact with the higher vibrational frequencies beyond the world of form. I came across something that Muktananda said in Reflections of the Self. He said that when sounds originally were created, the ancient sages vocalized the sounds vibrating in the different chakras of the body during meditation. And making these sounds acquaints us with the subtle force within ourselves, perhaps for the first time. So that when you think about how sounds came about in the first place, what Muktananda is saying, that the ancient sages vocalized the sounds vibrating in the different chakras of the body during their meditations. They would meditate, and they would hear sounds, and then they would use those sounds. And those sounds were later turned into words. And so what Guruji explained to me is that there are two essential chakras in the body to be concerned with in terms of manifesting. One is called the root chakra, the base chakra, or the sex center. Okay? And if you don't know where that is, you can turn this tape off right now. It isn't going to help you at all, all right? And the root chakra then has a channel, an internal invisible channel that goes from the base chakra to the third eye. And the third eye is the place that is located on your forehead between your eyebrows. Okay? And you think of this as a chakra or as an opening or as a computer terminal, if you will, that has been closed over. And to be able to radiate out energy from the third eye while meditating and sending that energy out into the world is one of the ways that we practice manifestation. And he said that there are two sounds to think about. One sound is the sound of creation. And the sound of creation, it's interesting, he encouraged me to look up the names that we have come up with throughout history for the Creator, for what we call the Creator. But as I looked up the name for the Creator in all of the different traditions in the world, ancient and modern, civilized, uncivilized in quotations, Eastern and Western, contemporary, and so on, I came up with 30 names for the Creator. And I was told that the sound will be in all of them. So listen to these names and see if you can hear a sound that they all share. The name for the Creator for the left-hand side of the room. Ra, Krishna, Rama, Buddha, Vakintanka, Adonai, Brahma, Siddha, Ahura Mazda, Shiva, Jehovah, Mahio, Kamisama, Naguo, Kali Durga, Tat, Sugmad, Gayana, Mahanta, Mahavira, Anu, Koda, Akua, Atva, Nanak, Asambula, Yahweh, God, Ato, Allah. And what is the sound that is with each and every one of these? The sound of Ah. This sound of creation, the sound of Ah, is the sound of God. And it is a vibration like everything else that is mediation between the world of matter and the world of spirit. And it is the only sound that you make that requires no effort. Creation is effortless perfection. So if you open your mouth and take in a deep breath and don't move your tongue or your lips or your teeth or your jaw, and watch my mouth as I am making sounds right now, and watch how things are moving, even though I don't know how I'm doing that, my nature is doing it. But nevertheless, my teeth are moving, my jaw is moving, my tongue is moving, my lips are moving, and as a result of all this movement, sounds come out. But when I open my mouth and I take in a deep breath of giving and receiving, and all of creation is giving and receiving, every breath you take is a taking in and a giving back. It's receiving and giving. As I open my mouth and make the sound ah, notice that if I move anything, I change the sound. But if I move nothing, I have the sound of ah, and it's the only sound that requires no effort. So it's ah. Now as I move it, do you see what happens? The minute that I move anything, the sound stops. It's not an accident that this sound is in the names for all creators, because sounds originated with ancient sages vocalizing what they heard in their meditations, this sound of ah. It is the repetition of the sound of God. And Muktananda, in Reflections of the Self, when he was teaching his students, said, with eyes brimming with love, sing his name. All inner mysteries will be disclosed. Every bird and plant will reveal itself to you as Brahman. The knowledge of Vedanta will manifest everywhere. O dear one, keep chanting God's name. While sitting or standing or involved in the world, never forget him. Unite your mind with the self. The way that you unite your mind, which is on the left-hand side, with the self, which is on the right-hand side, the way that you do this is through the use of the sound of ah. I ask you very early in this program to think of something that you would like to be able to manifest if you knew you had this power, if you knew it, if you had been taken out of your tribe and raised in a place where doubt was not possible, and you knew you had this power, what would it be? Would it be a healing? Would it be a promotion? Would it be a divine relationship? Would it be abundance? And people say to me, you telling me, Wayne, that if I do this, I can win the lottery? Is that what you're saying? And I say, well, let me ask you a question. How would you feel if you won the lottery? How would you feel if you suddenly found out that you had $1 million a year guaranteed for the next 20 years? How would you feel? Well, the answer always is, I would feel secure. I would feel blessed. I would feel safe. I would feel thrilled. I would be happy. I would be ecstatic. I would be joyful. And my response is, I can't guarantee you the lottery because God handles the details. But I can guarantee you bliss, security, happiness, joy. All you have are your feelings. That's the currency of the heart. The intellect's currency is analyzing and figuring. But the currency of the heart is your feelings. All you want to do is be at peace. That's all you're looking for on this time that you're here, in this parenthesis in eternity called your life. So what you do as you think about what you would like to manifest in your life is you take your attention off of it and put your attention on its essence, on the feeling that you will have as it begins to manifest. Okay? So you're not thinking about it showing up as much as how I will feel when it does, however it does, whenever it is supposed to. All right? You are participating in the act of creation. You are detaching from the outcome. You are unconditionally loving and knowing, and then you go about your business and you look for the cues. But you don't tug at the chutes. You just allow. And you use this sound of ah, the repetition of the name of God. There are places in the world where people do this meditation for 12 and 13 hours a day. I'm telling you right now, if you do it for 20 minutes in the morning, just this meditation in the morning for 20 minutes, and you put your attention on the third eye and clear the channel between the root chakra and the third eye and allow that energy to go out through the third eye, you will feel nourished, soul nourished, when it is completed. The sound of ah is the sound of joy, the sound of creation. It is the sound that accompanies procreation at the root chakra. And as amusing as it is also filled with a truth that perhaps if we could clear this chakra called the third eye, where our soul supposedly can be released, and see a channel moving up inside of us that has been blocked, and see this third eye as an opening that has been closed over, that I am going to open up mentally within myself, and I am going to put this energy of ah out into the universe. And as I do, I am going to attract to myself through the power of creation. Now, the left side of the room and the left brain has a great deal of difficulty with this. But remember, it's your conditioning. There are places in the world where people understand this and know this. And they're not asking for gold to show up in their life. They understand that they are at peace. And security is what they're asking for. And however that security shows up is fine. And there are people in the world who have no gold, like Sun Quar, the servant, but who are at peace and secure and fulfilled. And after all, that's all you're looking for. How it shows up is outside of our control. So that's the sound of Ah, and it is the sound of the morning meditation. There's also another sound, and this second sound is the sound of all that has been manifested in the world. This is your meditation of gratitude. If you take anything in the physical plane and reduce it down to its basic sound and put it on a scope and measure that sound, you will hear the sound of Om. The sound of Om. It is the universal sound. It is a sound of gratitude. In the evening meditation, you also repeat the sound of Om. But you don't ask for anything. You just send out your gratitude for all that has manifested in your life. And you will feel an enormous sense of peace and joy. And then those are the two sounds that we're going to do in the meditation here in a few moments. The sound of Ah in the morning, the sound of Om in the evening. The first third of the meditation, I recommend that you do it out loud, wherever you are. And then you do it more silently for the second third. And the final third, you do it with silence, silently to yourself. And all the time you're doing this sound meditation, this is your inner mantra, you are putting your attention on the third eye, releasing that energy out through the third eye, and you are only focusing on the feelings that you have, the feelings, not the event itself. And then in the evening, you do the same thing with the Om. And then the interesting thing is that you combine the two sounds at the end. And remember, I said very early on in this program, enlightenment is being immersed in and surrounded by peace at all times in your life. Peace is what the higher self, the sacred part of you, wants. When you combine the sound of manifestation with the sound of all that has been manifested, when you bring them together, those two sounds, the left side of the room and the right side of the room, when you bring them together, you have the sound that means peace, enlightenment. And that is the sound, the last sound that you make before you go off to sleep at night. The sound is Shalom. The combination of Ah and Om is Shalom, peace, enlightenment, the highest place you can get to.
This is the end of side 11. Side 12 is already queued up for your listening.